Greetings, everyone. Are you ready for an accelerated course in higher consciousness? This is how our global village will get ahead of the accelerated rate of change we are now seeing in the world. It won't be with the same consciousness that created the problems we see. It will be with a new consciousness that is now evolving with the angels of our better nature. Welcome to Cosmic Love.
Well, howdy, howdy. This is Christopher Rudy with Cosmic Love for July 22nd, 2017. Tonight, I'll be interviewing the visionary Jim Hamilton, who has much to share with us regarding the ascension process and other conscious evolution revelations that you may be familiar with in part or whole. This is a timely live interview with the new moon in Leo tonight. As the host of Cosmic Love, I begin many of my shows with a global news brief on the cosmic weather for my audience, which is 63 countries of the world that this show streams to over the internet. And tonight, our solar system is still rarefied from galactic alignment and the photonic light that has been flooding the Earth for 100 years, peaking in 2012 and gradually ebbing the next 100 years as our solar system cycles out of alignment with the galactic plane every 14,000 years or so, which is half the precession of the equinox, which is one full cycle of our solar system above and below the galactic plane. Well, that's the weather in general. And we've had great cosmic weather with galactic alignment. I mean, look how transportation has evolved from horse and buggy to space travel in just 100 years. As for the cosmic weather right now, tonight, the new moon aligns with both the sun and Mars in Leo, a fire sign. So it's a hot time in the old town tonight. Now, there's also a grand trine going on between Mercury, Uranus, and Saturn, all in fire signs. So this is the perfect time to fire up our minds with innovative ways to involve and evolve our individual and collective consciousness. So with that cosmic fire for wind in our sails, I'd like to introduce our guest today, Jim Hamilton. Jim, thanks for being with us on Cosmic Love.
Hey, Christopher, it's wonderful to be here, especially in all this weather.
Yeah. James, you've got a fascinating backstory that I'll assume most listeners have looked into, which is why they're listening. So let's skip to the good news and the bad news that you mention in Chapter 1 of your book, Visionaries Thrive in All Times.
What's the good news?
The good news and the bad news.
Yeah, well, the good news is God is our partner, if you will, and the bad news is we are God. So all we have to do is just start paying a little more attention and work it out.
I love that. I'm an old Bucky Fuller guy. You know, his World Game and the Fuller catalog, the we are as gods and might as well get good at it kind of a thing.
Exactly. Exactly right. Exactly.
So there's a lot of aspects of your work that kind of get into this, being in the world, not of the world, or, you know, being fully present, innate intelligence, the understanding of the different processes of consciousness that we're involved with, and how to create our own reality. And I really love this about your website. And again, we're talking about this is at coreresonance.com. That's one word, coreresonance.com. And you've got right up there at the top of the website that visionaries learn how to partner with innate intelligence, harness the exponential contribution of, as well as a lesser-known principle about shared receptivity, and learn how to collectively imagine a solution. I love that, and it reminds me, and you know, you give a hint about the solution that visionaries see through the debris field to the end result, which got me thinking about Nikola Tesla, who could invent working dynamos in his mind before building working models. But anyway, let's unwrap your statement about innate intelligence, and also the Maharishi effect and the map of consciousness. These are some things I want to go into from your book, and this is actually on your website, Core Resonance. you know, people that are learning how to navigate that under the one at the title bar at the top under activism, you have the 12 premises, which is a good overview of a lot of your research and findings. And some of these keynotes are really, to me, I mean, I'm familiar with them, but they're so striking in their profound effect. For example, the Maharishi effect. Could you mention that a little bit?
Sure. You know, the Maharishi effect is very interesting. Maharishi first, of course, made the statement that came from the Vedas and far, far earlier. It wasn't an original statement by his. It's a Vedic, part of a Vedic science. But the idea is that when 1% of a population is meditating in a locale, it will influence that locale. And what Maharishi and Maharishi International University and the whole thing with, who was a physicist that ran for president? He was that ran the Green Party. John, what was his name? Anyway, they did a whole bunch of these studies and demonstrations. In fact, I think they did several hundred of them over 30 years. And they did one in 1993 in Washington, D.C., and they brought in 4,000 meditators. Now, a meditator is not somebody that sits in the park and doesn't have anything else to do, so he shows up in D.C. This was 4,000 experienced meditators, and this demonstration was over a 7-week period. And by the way, the population of the District of Columbia was around 400,000, hence 4,000 meditators.
Uh-huh.
And what happened was, first they invited all kinds of academics and sociologists and criminologists and all kinds of people, professionals and et cetera, to observe not only what was going on, but how they laid it out, what they expected to see, how they were going to measure what they see, and on and on. And in the 7th week, in the last week, admittedly the most meditators were there because they showed up over a period of time, crime went down 23.3%, and so did traffic accidents. The whole thing changed when you had 4,000 meditators meditating in a locale, and that is interesting science. It's not traditional science, but it's repeatable, repeatable, repeatable.
Uh-huh.
And so what the humans need to learn how to do is we need to learn how to take these advanced concepts and harness them and use them. And, of course, that's what core resonance is about.
I got into transcendental meditation in the 70s, as well as a bunch of other things that were going on. Silver mind control, it also dealt with the levels of consciousness. That was really big back then, all of that stuff. It's like there was a massive awakening to the processes of consciousness, and there is a science to the meditation process that's taught, you know, with transcendental meditation. And that's one of the reasons that it really intrigues me, that I saw that it really works. And, I experienced it and saw what the dynamic behind of it. I didn't, you know, lock into it as my only modality, but, you know, as an effective modality for centering and connecting, stilling the mind or otherwise, you know, becoming conscious of how you're conscious. That was very, very unique and still is. And the point of that of group meditation and or a group centering really to me is fascinating. And also what you reference as the map of consciousness with that's what David Hawkins, MD, PhD, regarding in his book Power versus Force. Could you go into that a little bit and unwrap that a little bit? Because that understanding of this map of consciousness, then you have a whole section on that where you give a brief explanation of that on that page I referenced.
Well, let me say that when 4,000 meditators meditated, first off, experienced meditators, and by the way, I've got 40-plus years meditation background, and I started out with TM and then eventually just moved on to the cosmos.
Call is now being recorded.
Okay. I think that's inadvertently my cell phone Google Voice recording on its own. But
okay.
The point is, what I first learned is when I meditated all these years, I discovered that meditation was like learning how to listen with my nervous system. So I set myself up, or in this discovery about my own nature, very early on, I realized that the nervous system is a huge component of the discovery of the cosmos, and you're a part in it, and meditation is a great place to start.
Uh-huh.
So let me jump back to the Maharishi effect, because when 4,000 people are meditating, what happens is a meditator that knows how to meditate, an experienced meditator, when they meditate, they become empty. They move out of resistance. They move out of their mind. They move into the state of meditation. And to tie this into the map of consciousness, when you meditate and you become empty, basically that natural state of connection with the cosmos becomes evident, and you might say it flows through you. Because when you become empty, you have no resistance, and the natural state of the cosmos expressing, it expresses through everything, all of nature, everything, and the humans seem to be out of sync with that. But when we become quiet, move out of our mind, that natural state becomes available. And what happened with the Maharishi effect, when 4,000 people meditated and became empty, you might say God expressed into this dimension through those 4,000 quieted nervous systems, generated coherence, and that coherence dissipated distortion, i.e. a 25.3% reduction in rape and murder, etc. Now, the interesting part about that is that as people become quiet, as they meditate, as they move out of resistance, you can see how this works on the map of consciousness. So for people who aren't really familiar, 0 to 200 are the states of apathy, fear, grief, anxiety, rage, up through pride. 700 is where enlightenment starts. And 200 is kind of the break point on the map, and it's actually labeled courage. The point is, as you move up the map, as you move into satisfaction, joy, peace, love, which is not to be the same thing as unconditional love, but as you move up, you become less resistant. Resistance and consciousness are synonymous, or lack of resistance and more consciousness are synonymous. And this is what the map so capably displays. And this is what happened with the Maharishi effect. And other component that makes all this so very interesting, if you give me just 1 second, is
one
person at 700, admittedly a very high number, high consciousness, less resistance, more God expressing through them, counterbalances the negativity of 70 million people below 200. Now here's another component of science, new science, that we can learn to harness, and we're starting to have some interesting stuff here as far as people that want to make the world a better place, finding really effective tools.
Oh, I think this is fascinating. This is actually the book on this map of consciousness, you know, Power versus Force by Dr. Hawk. That's one of my top 10 favorite all-time books. I mean, it's and then when I got into that book, and I was hearing about it all over the place from different people, and I've talked to so many people that recognize that as, you know, like this understanding is huge as far as, you know, global humanity on the cusp of the Aquarian Age. We're on the cusp of what some people call the quantum age, or, you know, the quantum science, the quantum field, the unified field of consciousness, and the language of consciousness as a function of this map of consciousness. That was what they researched this over about 10 years using behavioral kinesiology to develop this map of consciousness, with more than a million trials or different, you know, examples where they were testing and calibrating, you know, this map. And of course, I'm fascinated from the perspective of my study of Carl Jung and his understanding of maps of consciousness, with a different frame of reference, which is more static in terms of, you know, just basic categories, whether you call it fire, air, water, and earth, or spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical, you know, the four lower bodies of energy from spirit to matter. And I looked at that from, you know, as far as all through pattern recognition of this, of maps of consciousness throughout history, like astrology, alchemy, governmental constitutional structures. You know, how there's a common pattern to all of these ancient and modern maps of consciousness. What Dr. Hawkins, I saw that he's done and that you're referencing, and I like the introduction that you give give to this in your Core Resonance website, you know, under activism. He goes into it in a way that, you know, the introduction is short and brief, but it'll whet the appetite, like the Maharishi effect. There's a section on that goes into that in more detail. There's so many other things that you've got into that I've noticed with your research and your findings on that page and some of your other pages. People that are exploring this subject, I think you'll find fascinating, especially right now, because it's, you know, the ascension process, what you reference as ultimate personal performance and the application of presence. I thought that was fascinating. And your one website on Core Resonance, I think it was Chapter 10, you go into coherence, then the coherent state of consciousness and the different alpha, theta, beta states of consciousness, and, you know, as frequencies of consciousness. Could you go into that a little bit more, and your example of the military pilot who can switch processes of consciousness very quickly? I thought that was fascinating.
Well, the idea is that presence is, frankly, first off, you can't get to presence with the mind, but when you get out of the mind, like in meditation or different kinds of states, that you can move into presence. Presence is interesting because in presence, guidance is available, and guidance delivers you to order. The question is, how do you get into extended state of presence?
Yeah.
The military, for example, they would occasionally find pilots that had this natural state of access to presence, or this natural state of presence sitting in a cockpit. And then the example you're talking about a little bit is theta. Let's say the alpha is the state of presence. I think you also find that's for meditation is presence. Alpha. But what they found was a pilot that needed visualization and imagination, he would jump into theta, or he needed focus and he'd jump into beta. But what they really measured was how quickly he jumped back to presence. In other words, they were looking for somebody who was in presence, because in presence, everything is available to you, and choices and decisions are not made by the mind. They're made by what? Guidance and higher aspect, because you're not letting the mind run your job. You've moved to presence, and through neurofeedback and different activities like this, and of course I do a lot of work with neurofeedback, it became apparent that people that are naturally in the alpha state had access, in having access to presence, had access to better choice making, and were accordingly better pilots. I'd rather do something else presence myself, but it was an interesting study.
Yeah. Interesting application. Obviously, you've got a multi-million-dollar plane they're flying, and you want the consciousness behind the cockpit. You know, it's interesting that the science actually went in this direction of an application for this understanding that was really critical to the success of the, you might say, the guidance system for the plane.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? One of the things that you can count on with humans, and, you know, I'm for them making it, you know, we're a lost species. We're having a hard time. We're all in the mind, all in the left brain, and we're all in this linear progression. But you can see that the humans and their inventions and discoveries and processes continue to refine. And in that continued looking for efficiency, they will eventually find God. And here they are in the cockpit of these multi-million dollar airplanes starting to use presence to become more efficient.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we don't much care about what they do with it. I mean, well, I don't want to get political, so I'll just leave that alone. But this learning how to act, see, what's about presence is when you move into presence, you've moved out of mind. Mind and resistance are synonymous, in my opinion, and you move into a whole other realm. And the beauty of that whole other realm, because that's the realm of God, the realm of innate intelligence or source or divine mind or whatever you want to call it. And that's what presence brings. And it's an interesting place to play.
Oh, I've been fascinated with this for years. Like incentive or intention has been, as we become conscious of how we're conscious, it's like a biofeedback loop, you know, where you develop conscience with a capital C, you know,
it's like
E equals MC squared, where C is the speed of light. As you approach the speed of light, all time and space becomes relative. Well, as you approach the speed of light with consciousness, you know, consciousness of how you were conscious, you might say that instant interaction with conscience is like you know, it's like biofeedback. It's like you have divine, you have guidance. It's like a guidance system, or they call it cybernetics, you know, self-governing, self-directing, self-correcting. It requires conscience, and this understanding of the alpha state and these natural states. I mean, they obviously don't teach us that in the public fool system, excuse the pun, but I think
right.
It's going there.
Right.
I mean,
if you want to go to school, go hang out with a tree.
Yeah, but it's going there. I mean, as far as the language of consciousness, you know, the language of light of consciousness, the understanding of the left brain thinking, I call it stinking thinking because it's lockstep, and like you say, it's the limitation, it's resistance to the nonlinear right brain spherical spirit of the law, which is more intuition, intuitive knowing without, you know, compartmentalized thinking. And that understanding is coming to the lexicon, and there's a understanding of the biomimicry, you know, like how the hemispheres of the brain are correspond to the hemispheres of the earth. And this is Lynn McTaggart, who I had on my show regarding her book, The Field and the Bond, which she talks about the left and right hemispheres of the earth, and her research showing that, you know, just like the historical evidence of language developed in the Western civilization with symbols of symbols, letters and words, that we read from left to right on a page, whereas in the East they have these holistic calligraphy symbols that they read from right to left because they're right brain dominant. In the West, we're left brain dominant. We read left to right. In the East, they're right brain dominant. Their language evolved, from right to left. And, of course, now we're in a global village where the two hemispheres are trying to get their act together.
One way that's showing up? It's showing up with video.
Pardon?
It's showing up with video. In other words, we used to just read, and we're reading, or we're listening and we're watching, and we're engaging both hemispheres.
Both hemispheres, because the right brain is more audio-oriented and the left brain's more visual-oriented.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
as we continue to move forward, we're... You know, actually, everything is fine. It's just going to drive us nuts paying attention to all the details. But
yeah.
You know, some of us are driven to, you know, to drive this. It's what happens is as we move out of resistance, God expresses through us, innate intelligence source, whatever you want to call it. I use God lately, and innate intelligence is really probably a better term. But as we move out of resistance, innate intelligence expresses through us, and the cutting edge of consciousness comes through those who allow it to come through them first.
Yeah.
And for which then, you know, everybody else kind of at their own rate and speed follows, and which is all perfect, of course. Some people are just out in front.
Yeah, and like anything else, visionary arts, you know, the more you work at it, the better you get at it. And I've always been fascinated, you know. I've had different training as a visionary that went from the whole, you know, photomechanical process as it relates to the perceptual process, you know, the light of consciousness. And there's an exquisite metaphor there between, you know, the, you might say the language of consciousness, the language of light, you know, from left brain to right brain in the full spectrum, you know, from left brain linear to right brain, you know, nonlinear, more emotional. Then you've got examples of this, like Scotty in the movie Star Trek, you know, how he's fiery emotional, you know, in that hemisphere, and you've got Spock on the other extreme, the other end of the spectrum. He's all intellect and no emotion, and all, you know, linear logic. And of course, you've got Captain then, who's the archetype, you know, of the balance of the two, the choice that we have, you know, from one hemisphere to the next, to think with our feelings or feel with our thinking, as Spock would say, you know, that Scotty was thinking with his feelings. these memes or memes, how you say that? They're reached a kind of a critical mass in the collective consciousness, and there's people waking up worldwide now with this, the new net reality of our instant everywhere, you know, interactive connection, you know, this global village, and it's to me it's fascinating how. The more information you have, the greater is the need to get it all in order, which is why I love to interview people like yourself, because you're a visionary and in the process of envisioning the process and understanding it is, you know, it's halfway there to, you know, knowing better is half of doing better, you know, with pure intention in the mix, you know, we learn and we grow, and of course that's the only thing we're going to take with us past this life is that which we've learned in this life. So here we are, you know, we're in this global village of a unified field of instant everywhere interactive communications with more than 4 billion global, I call them netizens, you know, online citizens that are now connecting, you know, the language that we have now, and of course, audio, video, but there's the universal languaging capabilities, like with Facebook and other social media, it's, you know, we're coming together. And, of course, you know, the big question everyone has is, okay, where is this going? What will that look like? And how do we get there?
Are you familiar with Peter Russell and the global brain?
And the global what?
Brain.
And the global brain. I've looked at different material on the global brain over the years. I'm not that. What's his point of reference there?
Peter Russell is, he's in the UK. I think he's associated with Stonehenge. He lives in that part of the world.
Uh-huh.
And there's a chapter of one of his books, and he talks about how a fetus will grow all of the brain cells like all at once. They just kind of proliferate and they all pop out. And then when all of that is complete, then they go through this process of connecting to each other. And he compares that to what's going on with humanity. First thing we do is we find our individuality, which actually is crucial, and then the internet allows us to all together. I just see it as an interesting analogy.
It is.
Facebook and the whole thing, you know, 40, what do you say, how many, 4 million, 44, how many?
There's more than 4, more than 4 billion people online now in social networks worldwide, which is amazing because there's only about 7.8 billion people on the planet. So about half the planet is wired, you know, with an instant everywhere interactive capabilities. A lot of those social networks are just local social networks, but the capability, you know, for the neural networking, you might say, of the global brain it's a real thing. It's happening, and I think a lot of it is unconscious and subconscious. It's coming into consciousness, but the vision of it is kind of like the superconscious emerging blueprint of where it's going, like the fetus, the global mind metaphor that you gave. That's like this neural networking. This is the first stage of a world waiting to be born.
So as individuals, quote unquote, come online, and I don't mean come online on the internet, but there's a consciousness coming. You can see humanity coming together. Yeah, there's still lots of division, but all that will work itself out. But as we become becoming more acceptable and more available to become conscious now.
Yeah.
Why? Because there's already a base of it. I mean, I got 40 years. There's a whole bunch of us have 40 years. You know, I started meditating in 73. I've grown up in this consciousness thing. I've been a part of it, and it's natural.
Yeah.
You know, it's natural. It's my wiring, and I think there's more people showing up than ever on the planet who are starting to wonder about the status quo and really wondering if that authority figure is really what it's all cracked up to be, or maybe there's a better authority figure, and maybe the way you find it is you start listening to your inner nature and you start delving within and discovering, oh, you need more order in here than there is out there.
No,
and you start paying more attention, and then you start building communities in that manner.
You have some work on this on your core resonance model and groups of individuals that can anchor, you know, like with the Maharishi effect, you know, within a local community, dealing with specific issues, and of course, what's going on with social networks. You have the same basic idea of the intention of these social network communities coming into unity. You know, this is what's going on with a lot of, well, like on Facebook, there are thousands and thousands of different social networks within Facebook, which are just networks of people of like interests who are, you might say, meditating on or have pure intention to understand on a, you know, in terms of a specific subject or a field of interest. And these are communities. And, you know, thoughts have wings.
Right.
There is no time or space. And this process...
Well, they have commonality, which makes the community.
Commonality
creates the community.
And so this dynamic is matriculating the matrix of the spirit that matters, you might say, on, you know, on Earth as in cosmos at large, which is, you know, Earth is part of this field. And then I began, you know, the show today with this kind of thing and talking about the cosmic weather. But, you know, the fact is that we're still in this peaking energy of galactic alignment. And I've referenced this many times over the years on my show to give a multiple, like, holographic perspective from all these different angles to looking at the same common understanding of we're in the universe and the universe is within us. And our solar system is in with the larger field of the universe, of our galaxy. And that... Those fields of, you know, hundreds of billions of star systems in alignment in the photonic, you know, the photon belt that comes out from the great central sun out to where Earth is, about two-thirds out of that spiral, you know, galaxy of our, you know, of our Milky Way galaxy. But our solar system orbits up and down, under and across every, 26,800 years, you know, the precession of the equinox, crosses it twice, and we just crossed it, you know, coming up and across it. Which is to say, hundreds of billions of star systems, their light, this photon belt, has been surging on Earth, and it's been changing the atmosphere of all the planets in our solar system. There's been complete atmospheric changes, you know, that have been very dramatic this last 20 years in particular. Because, and, you know, modern science, they don't talk about this, because if they do, as a general rule, it kind of blows the whole thing of conscious evolution, that it's actually, we're not doing it, you know, the monkey mind might say that, you know, say that we are, you know, monkey mind science. But fact is, it's like, again, we're in the universe, and the universe is in us, and we're basically, we are resonating with this core resonance with the field, the quantum field. And, of course, this is what this 5D dimensional shift is all about. From 3D to 4D to 5D, there's basically a frequency shift that is being experienced that has been this accelerating you might say, of awareness of how we are conscious, which it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, as you become more conscious of how you are conscious, you develop a conscience, and that's a self-correcting. It's like a cybernetic loop. You know, you're like a self-guidance system where you know, if you've got a small voice of conscience back there going yay or nay, you know, for direction, you know, you tend to head in the, you know, with a moral compass.
I think everything is working its way back toward God. Everything.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about Alexis, and we were talking about it earlier, and she works with energy that gets stalled. Like, let's say you have a house where, you know, somebody dies or somebody's been sick, and they, after that's all over, they sell the house, and they have trouble selling the house. It turns out that energy is still there, and what she does is she interfaces that energy and allows it to go on. Most people go in and try to break down or smudge or this or that or dissipate it.
But
she treats it like it's live. Well, no. She treats it like it's live and living in its own state and helps it release to go on. And what the analogy I'm making is that everything is moving back toward God, and at one rate or speed or another. And whether the planets and the solar systems are bouncing above and beyond and below photon belts and all this and that, it's all part of the mix. It's, we can be in as much resistance to this as we want, or we can learn how to flow with it. And as you learn how to flow with it, you move up the map of consciousness. As you move up the map of consciousness, you become exponentially more contributive. And, you know, that's the mechanism that we're talking about right now.
It sounds like in your example about declaring a real estate property so that basically the energies that were blocked can move on. It sounds to me like the movie series, you know, Touched by an Angel. She was always identifying the entities or, you know, energies that were stuck and clearing them and talking with them and then just letting them move on. I don't know if you ever saw any of that series, but she did that all the time.
No, I don't see any television. I don't know. Was that a long time ago?
Yeah. I mean, it was a real popular series. Her name, and she's quite a noted actor, you know, Christian actor. And it was people that were really, you know, simple Christian faith and really into God. It was that message, you know, of how you clear, you know, the dark spirits that are stuck, you know. And of course, she had second sight and would see them and talk with them and clear the clear their energy and says, you know, you can go to the light now, you know, and move on. I mean, it's almost what you're talking about. It's really a universal principle. The old school on that, from a religiosity perspective, was exorcism rituals, but that was more of a confrontational, violent thing rather than a path of non-resistance and letting the resistance, you know, go on. It was kind of a,
Well, you know, most people don't know how to look at things. Most people look at things with their mind, and they don't understand that their mind is resistance by its very nature, and they really can't contribute to what's going on, and they do much better to allow. I think there's an analogy I've used somewhere where, you know, how much success is generated by solving problems versus going out and starting something new.
Yeah.
And I think, in fact, going forward is by far the best example. I think there's a lot of people out there that have backgrounds in feng shui and things like that, and they have as much understanding as they have. But I guarantee you there's first grade, second, you know, whether it's exorcism or any of these things fooling with
That's
energy,
right.
There's first grade, third grade understanding, and then there's graduate school understanding. And, I've actually seen people that, even massage therapists, they work on people, they end up getting sick because they don't know how not to inadvertently observe what's going on. And when you inadvertently observe something, you inadvertently take it on.
Yeah.
So this visionary mode is important, that we learn how to go forward and learn how to use our gaze properly, if you will.
Yeah, the visionary gaze is notorious throughout history as, in the superstitious sense of the evil eyeball, but in the spiritual sense, it's the all-seeing eye of God. The founding fathers were really into, you might say the capstone of the pyramid of self and civilization, and the sides, the spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical sides of self, and the government, education, healthcare, and the economic sides of civilization. I mean, there's these, and the capstone as far as being centered and connected with the source or God or, God vision, and I think there's, this process is, the dynamics of it are really kind of universal. There's an understanding of it, for anyone that's a healer, that there's dynamics involved. I think all healing, whether you're talking about an individual or talking about a civilization, there are principles involved that, you take inventory of a condition, and you work with that.
Yeah, what I like to say is that we have to learn how to, we are the end result of our bloodline lineage thus far. We're the end result of 6,000 years, however far you can track your bloodline lineage. And for all intents and purposes, you're not going to be much more than the end result of your bloodline lineage. I mean, maybe you're the first in your generation to go to school, but if you really want to jump the trajectory of what you are and become more, you need to partner with something bigger than yourself. An analogy I use lately, Navy SEALs partner with the federal government. I say if you're going to partner with something, partner with the cosmos, learn how to partner with God, mesh with that, and then you start to become exponentially contributive, and then things start to get interesting.
Now, I really believe that the more that you become involved with the language of consciousness, become conscious of how you're conscious, the processes of consciousness, and get that small voice of conscience, in gear with full presence, then it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Anyone that's experienced cosmic conscience, with that the profound nature of and all that is real, source, God, innate intelligence. Anyone that has, that awareness and how to get there will, always want to come back to that as far as, or keep that as, basically a frame of reference that's centered and connected for divine direction, because there's no security without purity, and that purity of perspective of what is real, the discernment, the first gift of the Holy Spirit, whatever you call it, that's how, self and civilization moves forward. And of course, processes for doing that collectively in social networks, I talk about and write about Web 3.0, the next phase of the computer internet revolution, what that will look like in our social networks, as the language of consciousness becomes part of the interface for mass-to-mass interaction. So that basically it will culture, the process will culture social conscience and social networks, which is really, you can say metaphorically, it's like higher consciousness or Christhood or, the mediator for all that is real, is that voting one's conscience in a process, a real-time interactive way of doing that. Again, culturing conscience in our individual and collective conscience, and specific applications like healthcare and global healthcare. And this kind of where I've been at with publishing recently, and of course for decades now working with this model of global telecare as well as global telecom, and what that will look like and how that will work and how, the vision alone can be the catalyst for a self-fulfilling prophecy, because it will work. It will involve and evolve our individual and collective conscience. And, I mean, social conscience is another way of saying in the global mind, you know, social conscience is another way of saying, you might say the mediator for the mind of God, or the global mind as far as innate intelligence of our global village or Gaia, or there is a consciousness that in the collective unconscious as well as in the superconscious. It's like in the records of the past and the vision of the future. In the fully present now, you can access basically with. What do you, your expression you call pure visionary sense of looking at things? Or how is that expression?
A visionary looks through the debris field to the end result? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and how basically, we
create reality?
We shape our vision, and then our vision shapes us. And ultimate personal performance is a function of the visionary process. So,
I'd like to point out that the visionary process isn't really a mind-driven experience. It starts out that way, but there's a letting go. Visionary, in my opinion, in my experience, is somebody that's learned how to let go and plays in a bigger scale of order. That's where all the magic is and where the magic comes from. In fact, Alexis and I call an expression, I don't know if I can come up with it. Oh, yeah, blazin, B-L-A-Z-I-N, apostrophe. And it's presence on steroids. And my point is that vision and being a visionary is not of the mind. You learn how to harness the subconscious mind and goal setting and all that stuff. But in this introspective mode of discovering goal setting, you learn how to let go more and more, and that's where the visionary mode kicks in. It's actually in part in partnership with something bigger than yourself. That's where all the inventions and discoveries come from. Just being a mind-driven visionary is a short-sighted vision of what the whole potential of the thing is.
Yeah, I agree with you. These visionaries that invented all these great things, and Buckminster Fuller talks about this process where you're taking inventory of all the all the aspects of it, but then they let it go, or
they take a nap or have a dream about it,
and it goes to the right hemisphere, and they get that's when it comes to them, when they let go of all that clutter in the left brain.
Well, the right brain, left brain to me is all the same. You want to balance the brain, but everybody gets caught up, and it's left brain, right brain. There's a bigger game in town, and it's called presence. And you learn how to access presence. You can do that through meditation and some other things. Like I do a lot of work with neurofeedback now. But presence is where everything of interest is, and you've got to get to presence. In presence, guidance will show up and interface with you and deliver you to a higher scale of order. And that's what visionary is. Visionary is partnered with something bigger than yourself. That's real visionary.
So being fully present is basically letting go of the monkey mind, call it the left brain, or just...
call it the right brain while you're at it, too.
Well, yeah. Either hemisphere...
These are man-made. They've decided what the brain is, left brain, right brain. I don't necessarily buy it. Your nervous system is whole. It's coherent or it's incoherent. It's full of noise. It's full of static and racket. And when it's on overload, resistance is what you get. You learn how to clean up the nervous system, quiet the nervous system, which, by the way, your nervous system is your center. The brain is the single biggest part of it. You learn how to quiet the brain. That natural state of connection becomes evident, and you learn how to let it in and let it come through you, and you get out of the way.
That's interesting. It's about the brain being all over. I've read a lot about the brain colon connection, and how they're directly, the whole environment of the colon is there's a nerve that runs right up into the brain, and it's sometimes called the second brain. What's going on in the microbiome in the gut. And I think
whole nervous system in the gut. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's sometimes called the second brain, and of course, a lot of toxic thinking is related directly to a toxic gut, you know. And again, that we're back to the biomimicry and the biological model. And, you know, I've followed the left brain, right brain thing, and it has some applications for understanding, again,
It's kind of elementary. I'm sorry. That's my opinion. I think we've got to move beyond the polarities. This is good. That's bad. This one's better. But that's where we start. But again, as we move into presence, and presence gets introduced through meditation and things like that, you start going within. You start learning how to let the mind go and discover there's something to carry you, pick you up. What is it? You jump off and build your wings on the way down. It's kind of an analogy like that. The game is to learn how to let go. We can study left brain, right brain, till the cows come home, but we've got to learn how to let go, and we have to learn how to let go. And when we learn how to let go, the whole thing opens up.
How to let go and let God. That's a classic. And,
That's exactly right.
And be in the world but not of the world. And again, we're back into the greatest mysteries are veiled in paradox.
Well, so it's just like what my work has become, using neurofeedback as a way to rapidly quiet the nervous system. And as we quiet the nervous system, that natural state of connection becomes evident, and the mind will on its own subside. See, the mind, in my opinion, is a guard dog for a brain on overload. When we're in our natural state, we have access to guidance, and we don't have to process everything on our own. The humans got out of sync with our natural state, and the brain turned into a guard. The brain had to manually process the world. It got on overload in a hurry. It set up the mind. The mind's a guard dog for brain on overload. It keeps incoming information from coming in because what? The brain's already on overload. It's absorbed too much.
Yeah.
And so I use neurofeedback to quiet the brain, cause the brain, the components of the brain to talk to each other, the brain to quiet down. As it quiets down, that natural state of connection becomes evident.
Now, when you're talking about neurofeedback,
Go ahead.
When you're talking about neural feedback, are you talking about the meditation process, or is there any equipment you recommend?
Oh no, it's a system. Neurofeedback is electrodes on the scalp. It's software, hardware. It's a whole scheme, if you will. It's a whole neurofeedback and biofeedback are different.
So neurofeedback, what kind of equipment? There's equipment that you use that you would recommend?
Well, I sell it. I have proprietary neuro. I worked for a guy a few years ago. Actually, it was 2006 or 2007, and I sold $1 million for him at $40,000 a pop. And I learned. In fact, I wrote Visionaries Thrive in All Times. I immediately met my first physicist. He and I worked together for 14 months. I sold $1 million worth of neurofeedback for him based on the ideas in my first book, Visionaries Thrive in All Times.
Uh-huh.
We went our separate ways. That's when I wrote Core Resonance. And by the way, Core, C-O, stands for coherence. R-E stands for resonance. So it's all about becoming coherent within. In other words, you can do it through neurofeedback much more quickly than you can do it through meditation. Core Resonance training is about much more rapidly quieting the nervous system. I say what you can do more in 2 years with Core Resonance training with my neurofeedback than you can in 40 plus years of meditating.
And you get different core groups of six people that will buy these things together and have a group where they'll work, where they'll share the equipment themselves. And
share the ownership and share the learning curve of learning how to use it and support each other, because what we want to become a clear throughput mechanism for innate intelligence to express through us with no distortion. That is the game.
No, I think the vision of the vision, capability, the potential is for even just holistic health centers, you know, around the country, you know, and health resorts, you know, for people to kind of tune into, have this available, introduce it to them, and experience it. You know, I think that's so much the future, and we're going to have to finish up. Jim, I want to thank you for what you've shared, your book, your books. Your website on Core Resonance, and there's links on the website the episode information for the show to your website that people can get more information. And let's keep in touch. I'm fascinated with what you're doing. I think it's definitely one of those visionary tools and for one's toolkit, you know, to basically become more conscious of how they're conscious, you know, onwards and upwards.
Well, we have to become self-aware, and ultimately, as we become self-aware, we can monkey around with the outside world and all the things that go on, or we can start that introspective journey, and that's where all the interesting stuff is discovering what's within, because that's where everything is.
So I'm really grateful for having met you and been introduced to this, and believe me, I'm trying to make this my standard, you know, as far as an understanding of conscious evolution revelations at this time. And I think the more that we discuss it and, you know, share this kind of information, more people wake up to the same opportunity, which is really, again, the learning process, the growth process. This is what we take with us past this life in the larger eternal scheme of things. So...
Well, tell your audience if there's anybody interested to go to my website, and if they want to give me a call or send me an email, I'll be happy to talk to anybody.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for listening, everyone, and keep the faith. Happy trails until we meet again in 2 weeks. And bless you, James, on your path. Talk to you all later.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Christopher. Thank you.
Bye now.
May the quickening and awakening of consciousness begin with you and your own personal evolution in higher consciousness. Thanks again for listening to Cosmic Love.